Myers & Company, live from Cardinals Spring Training in Jupiter, Florida. Presented in part by J.L. Hubbard Insurance and Bonds.
We are back here on a Thursday. What a beautiful morning it is. A little chilly for Florida. We always have to ask, Senator Watson, we say Florida chilly or Illinois chilly, because it's a whole different thing. But it's going to be a beautiful day here. Our great pleasure to welcome Rick Hummel to the program. Rick, let's go back to your beginnings. I think you and Kevin Brahaney have a lot in common. You're a Quincy native, correct? Sorry, go ahead. We've got microphones all switched around here. All right, try again.
Yeah, I'm a Quincy native. I'm still dismayed at the Belleville West thrashing of Quincy in the sectional the other day, but I feared that the result was going to happen. But, yeah, I grew up there, and I spent my first, 21, 22 years there, I guess.
All right, and so did you know right away what you wanted to be? I mean, as a young man, I want to be a sports writer. Is that something you were – do all along, or is it something you fell into? How did you start your career?
I wanted to be a sportscaster.
Okay.
And as a kid, I used to be spot at games for Elvin and Melvin Tappy, legendary Quincy players. Elvin was a catcher and managed the Cubs, one of those rotating college coaches of college, whatever they call them. They had my eight managers one year. College of coaches.
College of coaches. Yeah. There you go.
And Melvin was a pitcher. And they both went to Quincy College, and they both played pro ball. Elvin made the big leagues with the Cubs a little bit. Melvin hurt his arm, but they broadcast all the high school and college games in Quincy, so I spotted for them. Anyway, go take the story up to high school now. Melvin Tappy is now my driver's training instructor when I was 16 years old, 1963, 62. And we were talking one day, and I mentioned to him I wanted to be he knew me from before. I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. And this is 1962. He says, these jobs are going to go to the former athletes. There's going to be fewer actual broadcasters and getting into this business. There'll be all former athletes doing this eventually. This is almost 60 years ago. He said this, 56 years ago. And he said, what you ought to try to do if you want to stay in sports is to be a sports writer. Well, I filed that away a little bit. I didn't do anything about it for a couple of years till I went to college. At Quincy College, I lived four blocks from home, so I'd walk to school over there, and I signed up to be on radio and also work for the weekly newspaper. So I'd write columns for the weekly paper and do one radio spot every Monday morning, mostly summarizing the NFL games from the day before. And that worked out pretty well for a year, although I didn't know how to type. So my mother was a professional typist on the side. She had another job, but she worked professional typing as a kind of a sidecar job. And she would type all my stories. I read them out longhand. So I get to my sophomore year, and I was thinking about continuing writing. But I'm thinking, as we go along with this, I'm not sure Mom can make all these games, I took a typing class the second year. Then I went to Missouri School of Journalism the last 2 years of my collegiate endeavor and worked at the Columbia, Missouri in there and that was the Blues first season. We covered the Blues a little bit.
Sure.
I covered some Stanley Cup games and I did a little Missouri. I did high school, everything. Missouri basketball was mostly my beat that last year. And Norm Stewart was his first year there. Then I went in the Army, but I got to work in Colorado Springs, where I was stationed for a couple years on a newspaper, and I came to Post-Dispatch in 1971.
All right. How much of life is accidental or coincidental? I was reading about the time that somebody couldn't make the trip, so you ended up covering Tom Seaver's only career no-hitter as a backup.
Well, a lot of us like that. We had a writer named Neil Russo, a longtime sports writer, and Neil was, in later years, was not quite as punctual, shall we say, or reliable. He had some family issues that he was dealing with, and so I got to cover some games. I'd get a call about 4 o'clock. Well, Neil can't make it tonight. Can you get over there to the ballpark? I'm okay. I did, and I got to be the number three guy on the beat for a while behind Neil and Dick Cagle, a longtime Post-Dispatch sports writer, sports editor of the Sporting News, went to Kansas City. But that's how I spent my first 5 or 6 years in baseball writing from 72 to 78 was being a backup, either number three or number two. But, yeah, it's, a lot of it's accidental. You're
right.
Precisely right.
All right. You have several books you've written, One Last Strike, 50 Years in Baseball, The Commission, the Cardinals. How did the Commission nickname come around?
We had in the office, we had this APBA football game. It was a dice and card, player cards, you know, programmed on how these guys did the year before. And the boards were very complicated for the many of the staffers to understand. So we had about a 9-team lead, then we had a 16-team the second year, and I had to go to all the games because I was the only one I can read how to read the boards, you know, so what the result of the play was going to be, whether it's a first down or pass gain or whatever. And so I was sort of the commissioner of that league. And then when I got into baseball, somehow it got into – I knew – a lot about baseball, or more than the people, you know, they thought I knew more than I did, maybe, let's put it that way. And so I got tagged with that. But the players, you know, as we go along, there's a different generation of players every 3 or 4 years. And a veteran player would always tell the newer players, this is the commish. So that's how it stuck. It isn't like, and then like the other day, Mike Maddox comes up to me and says, I hear they call you the commish. I said, well, yes, they do. And so now he calls me a commish. He didn't have any idea, but this all goes back to maybe it started with Bruce Sutter maybe telling people I was the commish.
Go.
And then it goes to Ozzie Smith and goes to everybody else. And so it stuck, and I'm proud of it. I think, but it did not have anything to do with baseball at first.
Sure. I got you. All right. What does the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown mean to you? I mean, we'll go back to what year was the induction?
2007. And everything's not a very good answer, I guess, but it means...
I mean, it's probably hard for most people to grasp
it means
what an honor that
it
is.
It means your career has been validated, and you don't start off doing that. In fact, for about 10 or 12 years, I was on the committee that put together the ballot for writers to be elected, and I didn't think much about it. And then somebody was saying to me 1 year, well, why aren't you in? Wouldn't you like to be in? I said, well, yeah, but I knew I couldn't be in, first of all, being on the committee. That's
that would not look good.
No. So I thought, well, I'll get off the committee. I'll ask off the committee, and we'll just kind of see what happens. Well, I got nominated, and I got in a couple years later. And to clarify, it's not, but we are honored with wouldn't, but it was the day that Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken went in, and it was raining that day, and there was a two-hour time window for whoever was doing the telecast. This might have been before MLB. Let's say ESPN was doing
sure.
it. And the president of the Hall of Fame gets on the bus as we're going over from the hotel to the outdoor area where they're going to have the ceremony. He says, we may have to change this up a little bit because it's going to rain. So they didn't want to have Ripken and Gwynn be on there when it was after a rain delay. They
sure.
So we're going to have those two guys first, and Denny Matthews from Kansas City and myself would be last. That's all right, I said. And then they said, and you may not get to speak at all. I'm thinking, oh, boy, that takes a load off my mind. I think, wait a minute now. I've been preparing 6 months. I want to make this speech. I got this.
Yeah.
So as it turned out, it didn't really rain. Tony went first, Cal went second, I went last, finally, and I had a speech down to 6 minutes and 13 seconds. And I got through it okay, and afterward I see Harmon Killebrew, and he says, great speech. I said, well, thank you, but you just liked it because it was short, didn't you? Because it was the last one. He said, well, yeah, but it was still a great speech.
So before we get, I want to ask your opinion about baseball and what baseball needs to do to grow fans and to get young people involved. And this answer's all over the place. But I want to talk about some of the memorable moments. You have an entire book about this. But, you know, you've seen some of the great stuff. How do you stack up the great moments in Cardinal history, according to your bird's eye view?
Well, I guess for moments, maybe McGuire's home runs.
Sure.
Ozzie Smith's home run off Needham Field to win the fifth game of the 85 championship series. And a couple days later, Jack Clark's home run
right.
off Needham Field to win the series. The first World Series I covered that the Cardinals won was 1982. That was a big deal. 85-87 series were – those are the ones they should have won and didn't because guys were hurt. They should not have won 82 because Raleigh Fingers was hurt for the Brewers. those kinds of things. I think for games, I've covered a bunch of no-hitters, Bud Smith and Jose Jimenez and Bob Forsch, of course.
Sure.
But I think the home runs are probably the – because people like home runs.
Sure.
McGuire's whatever home run, 60-first, 60-second, any of them.
Where do you put the Freeze home run?
Well, okay, that's one I should have mentioned earlier, I guess. That's that was –
As far as pure adrenaline and excitement, it's pretty tough to beat that moment late into a weekday night.
That was my assignment was sort of a wild card assignment that night. It was the sixth game of the playoff and the World Series for me in 2011. And so I was going to be doing the Rangers. So I went down at about the bottom of the eighth inning down to the press room, and I was going to wait for the game to be over so I could get on the field and get to the Rangers right away because the game was getting real long and the deadlines were piling up on us. And all the Rangers' wives and assorted family were lined up outside the room. You had to kind of plow through them. They're ready to burst onto the field and congratulate their loved ones. Well, then the Cardinals tie the game on Freeze's hit. And then I go back upstairs. So this isn't what I'm going to be working on anymore. So then he hits a home run, so I run back downstairs again. And I end up doing something on La Russa, having run out of players, and he had Kyle Loesch was pinch batting, and he got a bunt down that helped set up an inning there. But that was a big deal that I didn't – you didn't see that one coming. You knew McGuire's going to hit a home run.
Sure.
You darn sure didn't see Ozzie Smith's home run coming, but you could see McGuire's home run coming. You just didn't know what inning it was going to be.
No doubt about it. All right, let's talk a little bit about the future of baseball and the future of baseball sports coverage in the media. A lot of people telling us we have to speed up the game. A lot of people telling us we do X, Y, or Z. We can get more people interested. I'm kind of the old school camp that I think we need to get people to fall in love with what's right with the game, you know, and that's got very little to do with whether we're making pitchers take less time. You know, it's the beauty of the game, the drama of the game, the way it plays out. I've always loved radio and baseball because they go hand in hand, you know, with all the nuance. Do we really need to change the game, or do we need to educate young people about the beauty of the game?
Well, I don't think we need to change it very much at all. First of all, how many people go to more than 5 or 10 games a year?
Very few.
Unless you actually live in that particular city. And I don't think they care whether the game is 3 hours and 6 minutes or 2 hours and 58 minutes. Not really. 8 minutes? Come on.
Yeah.
If you're watching on TV, maybe you might click it off earlier. But you don't have to have artificial rules to speed up the game. How about maybe not trying to hit a home run every time up, and which leads to a lot of strikeouts. Strikeouts take much longer than a ground ball to shortstop. You can get that on the first pitch. You can't strike out on one pitch. If more balls are put in play, the game goes faster. You might have as much scoring if you put it in play. Maybe the other guy will miss it, you know.
Right.
Or it might go off the wall. I mean, not go over the wall, it might go off the wall. Or maybe it's a single. Maybe 3 or 4 singles could happen in the same inning. God forbid. So there's ways to do that. You don't have to. I mean, 6 visits to the mound. Now, come on. It's going to be on the scoreboard now. And when the other team gets up to 5, the fans are going to go, ooh, only one more. that's silly. I mean, sometimes you need to go out. Now, the World Series was also silly. There were many. It's like the pitcher had just come into the game for the first time with that team, you know. It wasn't his first game. It was his 80th game at that stage of the season.
All right. And then what about covering baseball and sports in general and the role of newspapers in the future? I mean, people like to predict it's the end of everything. I think there's plenty of newspaper out there. They may be getting it a different way, but what's the future of coverage of baseball?
Well, I wonder about that. I think I'm not going to be around long enough to have to worry myself into a lather over it because there'll still be newspapers while I'm covering this team, I hope. I don't think you can get what you want unless you have a newspaper. You go online, and sometimes you get blocked off by ads, and you're trying to find, where did I leave off here? When newspaper, you put it down, pick it up. So what if your hands get dirty a little bit? I mean, you know where to find everything. And it's not as immediate. You have to wait till the next morning to get it. Online is faster. And there's going to be more. I see more papers with tighter deadlines not getting their game stories in the paper. They just have their game stories online. Well, that disappoints me. Like, Cincinnati's like that. Especially for any game that's outside of Cincinnati. I think, you know, west of Cincinnati, even in St. Louis, it's too late for them. That doesn't seem right. But that's the way it's going to be. Online is where it's going to be. And I have to had to keep up with that as best I can. I'm not exactly a maven of online writing, and I can blog. I don't do any Facebooks. I do a chat once in a while, but they've been gracious of me not to involve me too more heavily than I can handle. So, but that's where it is. I've had to adjust and not complain about it.
All right. Legendary baseball writer, Baseball Hall of Famer, the commish, Rick Hummel. Thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you, guys.
We're going to take a break. When we get back here, we've got Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports right after the news and so much more. Beth Newhoff straight ahead. We'll be visiting today with John Rooney from the broadcast team and so much more. That's for you, Jeff Daly.